We're so glad you're back for another episode of the Anna and Susanna Show. We have a big favor to ask. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast through iTunes so you get a notification every time we post a new episode. Also, if you like hanging out with us as much as we like hanging out with you, please rate and review our podcast. This helps us tremendously and gives us the momentum we need to keep the show going for you. Now that we have that out of the way, buckle up, ladies. The show is coming up next.
Hey, baby, I know you've had a hard day. Packing lunches, folding laundry, getting the oil changed in the caravan. Or maybe you've spent 8 hours in the cubicle with that jerk boss looking over your shoulders. Settle down, pour a glass of red, kick your shoes off and forget about your cares, baby. It's time for the Anna and Susanna Show.
Hi, this is Anna Lynn Thomas, the founder of Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's.
And this is Susanna B. Lewis of Whoa Susanna. Welcome to the Anna and Susanna Show.
Susanna, it's been one of them days. Don't take it personal.
In parentheses. Don't take it personal.
I have such a good voice. I don't know why I've gone into like podcasting and writing when I should be singing, but
you definitely should be singing.
Yeah, I know. So watched the Super Bowl yesterday, and it was probably one of the most. I've had some Super Bowls where I go to parties and I have beer and I'm having a great time. I would say yesterday was probably on the list of one of the most boring. I think I held a baby.
You were messaging me during the Super Bowl.
I know. Well, exactly. I think I finished your book during the Super Bowl. That didn't make it boring.
Oh, thanks. It was one of the most boring Super Bowls of my life. I finished Susanna's book.
I'm so glad that you reminded me of that because, you guys, I finished Susanna's book, 10 Years Taken. First, this is the first time I have ever read a fiction book from a friend. Okay. Well, I mean, I've read short stories back when I was in college and, you know, stuff like that. But this is the first time I've ever read a novel. And I have to tell you that it's very difficult not to think of your friend when these things are happening. Because it was hard not to make you her, you know, and call you and be like, Susanna, how did you get through it? You know what I mean?
People ask me, is that fiction? I'm like, no, my husband kidnapped me 12 years ago.
What's that fiction?
Please send help. Thank you.
So I told Susanna this yesterday, and if you haven't read her book, please do. So I guess how much can we say? How much do you tell the reader?
It's old news. It's old news.
It's a book about a woman who is kidnapped. She has a young daughter. And I got to say, there's a lot of premarital sex in this book, Susanna, and I just want to know what your Bible study thinks about it, because...
No, there isn't. She did it one time and got pregnant. That was it. She said that in the book.
She had sex with him just a handful. That was the only time they had sex. They had sex a little bit after that.
No, they didn't. Chapter 7. One time.
Just wasn't that good.
I'm just kidding.
No, they had sex that one time she got pregnant. So that was a real whoop-de-doo. She has some bad luck.
Oh, that's the love of her life, though.
It was passionate, I'm sure. And then they only had sex a handful of times after that. She's very inexperienced. Then she's kidnapped by this man. And what I love about the book is that you get Susanna's humor in it, where she says things that are just super funny in a book that's dramatic on a serious topic, which I love.
Oh, thank you, Anna. I teared up.
Are you kidding? Or are you serious? God, I love you. Both. You're like neither. And
I
one
did
of
tear,
them.
I did tear up a little bit.
Oh,
thank
bless you.
You.
Mm-hmm. So then... Mm-hmm. As it continues to go on, I had to figure, I knew this was going to be a book because I know Susanna is a talented writer, but I thought this is going to be hard for her. It's going to be hard for her to really capture the Stockholm syndrome to make it believable when someone.
Can I tell you something? I didn't know what Stockholm syndrome was until somebody said,
I
she just told all about Stockholm Syndrome, and then I had to Google it, and I was like, holy shit, I did.
Wait, you didn't know what Stockholm Syndrome was before you wrote this book?
I didn't. I'm an idiot. I had no idea what it was. No, I didn't. That's the honest truth. I didn't until I kept reading the reviews on Amazon. They're like, she covered Stockholm Syndrome pretty well. Like, I was supposed to know what that was.
Well, now you know. Was that in Stockholm where when the women identified with their captors?
Well, it's like the story of, you know, the girl that really happened to. What was her name? And she lived with him for 18 years,
right,
or something.
Right.
Remember? And
yeah.
Somewhere in the Midwest, I think.
Yeah.
Which I did think about that when I was writing it, but I didn't know that that was called Stockholm Syndrome. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
So she really captures the transition of what it would be like in that situation and how it is actually possible to start to have feelings for that person. Which you just think you never would in a gazillion years, and then you do. And then there's some twists and turns because you don't know who's the bad guy and what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was good. I mean,
Thank you.
I don't know what to tell you. It was good. I was starting to get irritated at my baby who was fussing. I'm like, excuse me, I'm in a important chapter. Hold on.
Yes. That was my goal for women to yell at their babies.
Exactly. Well, speaking of yelling babies, I actually hear mine crying, and I'm just really hoping my husband gets it together because
he's got to
stand up. Sometimes I go down. I'm like, "You're not standing up with her. That'll help." He's like, "Well, I'm just watching something, you know."
I know, not a clue.
Just wants to take shortcuts. So I read that. If you haven't read it yet, please do. And now I've got suspicion. Sugar Creek coming up next, and I cannot wait for that. So
thank you.
Anna. It makes me want to dust off some of my old short stories.
I wish you would. Fiction is fun.
Yeah,
I love it. I bet you're good at fiction. Those satire pieces that we wrote, like kind of like the Onion type stuff. Those were good. I bet you'd be good at fiction.
Well, I mean, short stories, but to commit to a novel, I can just see myself halfway through just being like, womp, 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 womp. I mean, it ain't easy. Clearly, you know this.
Yeah, it is time consuming, but it's worth it. It's fun. I think it's fun though. Just making up stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So
I'm gonna challenge you to write some fiction soon.
As if you
have nothing else to do.
I have an appointment with my agent tomorrow very early in the morning because she's in London right now. And I'll just be like, hey, can I do some short stories? She'll be like, what? No.
Heck yeah.
So I would like to. I think it would be kind of fun. But I got to start with short stories. You got to start off simple. Go a little David Sedaris style.
Sorry.
And then maybe ease your way into a novel, I think.
That's all right. That's okay.
So please watch it. Now, okay, so then I finished and I watched. I said, go watch it. Please read it. But then I watched the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did, yes. I watched it at my husband and kids went to a Super Bowl party. And I stayed at home to write, and I'm trying to eat better. So I didn't want to go and be tempted to eat a bunch of food that's going to put me back in my fat pants. So I stayed home, but I watched it, you know, because my brother works with Lady Gaga and I wanted to try to see him, which I didn't see him, but that's primarily the reason I watched it. And I'm not even a football fan, but it was a really good game. I mean, don't call it a comeback.
I know.
That was an exciting game.
My husband hates the Patriots, so it got pretty painful there at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just too much winning. You know, you just start to be like, come on, man. Somebody else. It's just.
I know.
And it was sad. And I felt bad for. I always feel bad for the players that just. They think they've got it. And then they're just watching it slip through their fingers. Am I the only one who feels like. Overtime rules aren't fair. That, like, you make a touchdown and then it's over. I think the other team needs to have a chance.
That's what I asked Jason, and I was like, don't they get a chance? And he was like, only in college ball, not in NFL. That's it. It's done. I was like, that doesn't seem right to me.
I know. My husband said that when you're at this elite level, your defense should be able to stop them. And if they can't, then you don't deserve the chance. And I'm like, that still doesn't feel right to me. It feels so unfair.
It does.
And he goes, they could go on and forever. They could go back and forth for, 3 hours.
So if you win the coin toss, pretty much, they should just label you Super Bowl champion right there.
Yeah, just shoot the confetti after that. Just shoot the confetti.
I have a question that I've often wondered. The losers, as soon as they win, they come out with all these hats and shirts. They had all those hats and shirts printed up for the losing team, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What happens to those?
I know. Isn't that just such a sad waste of resources?
What a waste.
That is how spoiled America is.
Throwing away Falcons hats. Here's 3,200 Falcons hats. Throw them in the fire.
I know. It is. I always think about that. I'm like, what a freaking waste. Okay, so what'd you think about Lady Gaga's halftime show?
I thought it was really good.
I thought it was really good too. That people warned it was going to be political. So I started to kind of just tense up because I was like, I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to hear her political views right now. But I thought she did it pretty classy.
It was classy. And I just want to thank her for keeping it non-political. I thought it was good. And, she's saying God bless America. And nobody's fighting and mad about it today. So I think it's great. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, my brother works with the tech team. He's the guitar tech, and he was posting a lot of these pictures, and it's really phenomenal how quickly they set that up and take it down. It's mind-blowing.
Yes.
Like, within one commercial break, they're doing all this, and he didn't have time to post photos then because, of course, he was busy. But afterwards, the aftermath, and he was on the halftime Snapchat story. And it's like, video of them just working their tails off, and you could see him. And it was just mind blowing how much work goes into that.
Mm-hmm. I thought, how she leaped off of stuff twice?
Yeah.
Okay. I know that there was tension, so it didn't feel like bungee jumping. But can you imagine the balls on this woman to just leap off of stuff while singing?
No.
I mean, I got to prep myself up. I like adventure. But if I'm going to jump off anything, even if it feels tight, there's tension, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like,
It's got to be hard to hold a high note during that. What if it just turns into a scream?
Yeah, I can't even stand upright on a platform. She was dancing on a platform on a square that she was on that rose. I would have to be holding on, squatting while that thing rose, and she was able to dance on it with her high heels. Uh-uh. I got a lot of props. You gotta give her some props for that.
Absolutely. It's work.
I will say, I don't know if it was better than Katy Perry's, and I'm not a big Katy Perry fan, but her visuals on that halftime show were out of control, and that tiger or whatever she was riding on. Do you remember that halftime show?
Uh-uh.
And it had the left shark. And the left shark became a meat.
No. When was this?
It was a couple years ago. You don't remember the left shark? Well, I don't know if it was a couple years ago. It probably was 10 years ago, and I feel like it was 2. But
oh, I was wasted. I didn't see that.
Wait. No, you don't remember the left shark. It's like the biggest meme ever, that blue shark, because he's behind her, and he's completely off. And so everyone made a meme out of the left shark.
I don't remember, Anna.
I think
the Backstreet Boys did halftime one
year. I remember one year it was like The Who. I was like, bad choice. Who? Yeah. Who's The Who?
Who's The Who?
You can't have people legends like Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake do these types of things, and then all of a sudden be like, you know what, this year we're going to go with The Who.
Yeah, Who? These young kids don't know Who. The Who?
A bunch of elderly men playing guitars with their arthritic fingers.
Who
Which is still really impressive. Have you seen Steven Tyler's fingers?
Oh my gosh.
They're sideways.
Yes, I have noticed Steven Tyler's fingers. What was he on? He was on something, but his hands caught my attention and they looked very painful, don't they?
Painful and sideways. And so does Perry. Perry, I don't even know how he plays a guitar. He's still a master and his fingers are sideways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then his foot's jacked up because he's like, dude, looks like a lady. And he's always like stomping his foot and his foot's all jacked. These men take a beating when they're on stage.
Natalie asked me, she said, what's moves like Jagger mean? I said, Mick Jagger, Natalie, Mick Jagger, who's that? And I pulled it up and she said, who's that old woman? So that's Mick Jagger.
Well, she's not wrong visually.
No, dude looks like a lady.
Yeah. How these men have some really gross stories about some underage women too, which always make me a little uncomfortable.
Oh, of course they do. You know they do.
Like when Mick Jagger has some story where one of his friends brought his 15-year-old daughter, and then he just took his daughter into the bedroom, and the guy was being interviewed, and he's just like, "Be good to her, Mick. Be good to her."
That's disgusting. This is so sinful.
We're just saying statutory rape is just like, "Be good to her, Mick." Yeah, what a legend.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I wish I knew more names because I feel like.
You gotta take a drink.
Just Google it, everybody. It's true. Okay. I've seen the documentary.
Don't Google it.
Okay. Don't Google it. That's a good idea.
We'll take your word for it.
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit today about something that I think is really important, and that is. Is motherhood enough? Just being moms, is it enough?
Wow. It's deep.
That's it. There's no answer to that question, so.
Is it?
Bye-bye. No. I want to ask this because even women who, so many more women work from home now, but they're not necessarily working at jobs that are their passion necessarily. They're just kind of working to help because we need, you know, two incomes. Mm-hmm. So I think motherhood, stay-at-home moms was the all women did for years and years, right? So Has things changed where we need more, or was it not enough then, and it ain't enough now? What do you think?
Not enough then, I don't think.
Is that why they were in like a lot of PTA meetings and like in
Back to Mick Jagger, Mother's Little Helper.
Yeah.
1967.
Mother's Little, is that a song?
Yeah. Be good to it, Mick. Be good to it. The song about the mother on taking Valium pills to get through the day, Mother's Little Helper.
So a lot of people romanticize when we grew up.
And Quaaludes. Sorry. I'm sorry. I couldn't leave it. Somebody's listening right now. It's Quaaludes, you dummy.
I do it at least 10 times in every episode, so they're used to it by now. We always make fun of like this new like helicopter parenting and everybody being so afraid of children and calling CPS on mothers who leave a 12-year-old in the car while they go run in to return something and the doors are locked. You know what I mean? This kind of world we live in. And then a lot of people I'll notice that when that is romanticized, people will be like, actually, a lot more kids were molested. It just wasn't reported back then. And stop romanticizing a time where children were more injured. It is more dangerous than it was back then. And so there seems to be two different thoughts where, you know, I feel like it was better back then. I just do. I just feel like people, I really do believe that people just think things are worse because of what we see on the internet. I'll give you an example. Just going through my feed, I saw that two toddlers have died. One of them was a GoFundMe and one of them was a tragic accident. I would have never have known about that in the 80s.
Yeah.
So now I've seen it, I feel like all of our toddlers are in jeopardy, and I need to go clutch mine, and I'm scared to death, and I'm on edge because I feel like I could lose my baby just like these poor families lost theirs, right? So I really think that the internet does make us feel like we are, that life is harder, that our children are more in danger. Mm-hmm.
It's too much information.
Way too much information.
The internet, the news, the media, you know, they didn't show such graphic things on the news in 1957, you know?
Exactly.
Those things were probably happening, but it just wasn't something that you wanted to broadcast to the world.
Right. Right. So I've been thinking just as, you know, from working from home, it ain't easy. I'll tell you that. And there were times where I was nursing my baby and I was watching Food Network in a recliner and I was healing from having the baby. And I had all of my writing deadlines and keeping hoo-ha's afloat and all of these things that I should be doing on top of my brain. And I thought, oh, what if all I had to do was care for my babies? I didn't have to worry about all this other crap. What a burden would be lifted off of my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then I thought that would last 3 weeks max. And then I would be depressed.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't be, you know, I believe my gift is humor writing. And if I wasn't doing that on a regular basis and putting it out there, then I would be depressed and I would feel like something was missing in my life.
Right.
So it makes me wonder how many, so you were talking earlier that there was a big period in your life where you weren't writing or doing much. You were just a full-time mom. What was it like for you during that time?
It was very lonely at that time. When I found out I was pregnant, I worked through the pregnancy. And then after I had her, I quit my job and stayed home. We were blessed enough, financially blessed, where I could stay home with her. And I didn't do anything but care for my children until after my son was born. Mm-hmm. So almost 5 years of just strictly being a mom, which was very rewarding. And I'm not knocking that at all. They're my greatest blessings, of course. I don't even have to say that. That's just a given. But it was very lonely. And then there came a time, and I'll tell you how I got started on it, was MySpace. MySpace. This is true.
Yeah.
Do you remember those surveys you could do on MySpace? Like people would post them to their wall. Is that what it was called? I don't even know. They would post it to their wall and it'd be like, your favorite color, or what would you do if you found a dinosaur egg? And all these things, and you would answer them, and then you would post it, then your friend would copy it and then do their answers. Do you remember those?
Barely. I remember I made my profile. I put the song Maps on it. And then not much. And then I don't know, remember much after that.
Maps. Oh, God. I'd always had like Pink Floyd or something on it. With an ex-pothead. Well, anyway, there were these surveys. Well, they have them on Facebook now. But anyway, you know, where you fill in your answers, then you copy and paste it for the next person to fill in their answers. So I would do those all the time out of just boredom. Mm-hmm. I would be on MySpace surfing around and I would do those. And I would always make them really lengthy and funny. Mm-hmm. And people would be like, oh, Susanna, you're so funny. Ba-da-da-da-da. And that really, that's the honest truth. That really, because I'd, you know, been writing throughout high school and college and since I was a kid, but I'd put that on the back burner for 5 years. And I thought, you know, that's really what I miss doing. I miss writing. And this is not enough for me. Mm-hmm. In love with my children and am blessed to be able to stay at home with them. But I have lost myself somewhere in this. I had forgotten what, talking about gifts and purposes, I had forgotten that my gift also was writing and that it was a purpose. And so that's what really motivated me to start writing, because I was lonely. Mm-hmm. And all I was those children's mother and Jason's wife. And I had no identity of my own. And I have friends now who are that way. And they'll tell me, you know, you have your writing and so-and-so has her work and so-and-so takes pictures and does photography. I don't have anything. And mm-hmm. it's lonely. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that often. And, you know, my advice for that is you've got to find something.
Yeah. There, everybody, I get that a lot. And when I first started my Anna Lynn Thomas website, I actually talked a lot about this, because I do feel like purpose and having a purpose and working your gifts are a part of what makes this world make sense, when a lot of the time it doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
And I would get some people who are like, yeah, but how do you know what your purpose is? And I remember being like, good question. May I recommend Purpose Driven Life by Rick Warren? You know?
Yeah.
Because I don't even know if Purpose Driven Life even fully really helps people find that either. It really has to just come down to, I really believe that everybody is drawn to a particular thing. And yeah. we're lucky, because writing is art and art is obvious. Art is always obvious. Like, oh, you were meant mm-hmm. to be a painter. Oh, you were meant to be a singer. Oh, you were meant to be an actor. Mm-hmm. Or you were meant to be a comedian, because you're good at those things. But, you know, there are people who don't have those creative tendencies, and no one thinks, oh, I'm supposed to be good at math. Oh, I'm supposed to be good at science. Or, you know what I mean? Like, they don't think that science is necessarily, or math is their purpose. Like being an accountant, they're like, my purpose in life is to be an accountant. Yeah. But if you enjoy it, absolutely, because yeah. we sure as crap need accountants in this absolutely. World.
Yeah.
You could argue you need them more than, you know, mm-hmm. the video I just did about questions I have that need answers.
It's a great video, by the way.
Yeah. Will you guys hilarious. Go to my, will you please? That one bombed for some reason. I don't know why.
It's hilarious.
So,
I think it's what you and what, you know, the age old question, what would you do even, you know, if you could pick your career and not even get paid for it, what would you do? Right. You know, I mean, if you could get paid for doing what you love. And I think if people would ask it, you know, even if it's running, jogging, if you find something that you're passionate about, mm-hmm. then you have to make time to do that.
Working with special needs. I saw on the OWN channel a couple years ago, it was called Special or something, but it was a documentary on Down syndrome adults. And I just loved it. There's something so beautiful to me about Down syndrome and their inability to catch nuance, but they want to love, and they are adults, and they want to get married, and they want to have children, and they understand. They just mm-hmm. lack the ability to catch nuances in conversation and in relationships. It's just pretty much they just say how they feel.
Right.
Well, I caught this one episode of there's like a new series out now, and I forget the title of it, and it follows, it's a reality show of these Down syndrome adults. And for instance, one of them has very mild features, so he's kind of like the hot one that all the girls are in love with.
Yeah.
And he likes typicals. They call regular people like you and me typicals. And he likes typicals. So he's in the back seat and his mom's like, hey, so how's dating going? He goes, well, I only want to date typicals. And she goes, well, how's that going for you? And he goes, not very well. She's like, well, because he kept like asking out, you know, normal women, and he was getting rejected and getting very depressed. And so there was this one scene where he was with a friend of his, and he's like, I just have to come to the realization that I'm never going to be with Meghan Trainor or Emma Watson. And his friend was like, maybe it could happen. He's like, no, don't you understand? It's never going to happen. And I was like, God, I love them so much. It's just this pure innocence and desire, right? And it's wonderful and beautiful. And I was thinking of these counselors and how they interact with them and guide them and teach them. And I go, what a wonderful purpose that is.
A servant's heart.
Yes, to work with these adults to help guide them through their relationships. Some of them want babies, and so that's very scary and kind of complicated. And so making sure, you know, that they don't become promiscuous in order to make that happen, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I just thought, you know, there are so many different things that there are so many different purposes in this world that make it go round. And if, you know, there's been these times where I've just been with my babies and we're all cooped up in the wintertime and we're laying there and I'm watching Storybots on Netflix, and you do think to yourself, there's got to be more to life than this, you know?
I do know, yeah.
I think that is a common thing that so many mothers say to themselves today, picking them up from soccer, dropping them off, doing this, doing that. The mundane day-to-day stuff, you have to start to wonder, whenever that creeps into your mind, that there has to be more to life than this. To me, that's the moment where you start to think, okay, I'm not practicing my gifts.
Yeah.
And putting them out there.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know.
Well, I think there's just a void if you're not, you know. In the Bible, 1 Peter says that we've each been given a spiritual gift and to use those gifts to serve others. And when we joined our church, we were given a spiritual gifts assessment. And it was a really interesting test, you know, because like you said, some things are obvious. Writing, the arts, painting, you know, that kind of thing are obvious things. But you think about the people who don't gravitate towards that kind of thing, what can they do? And like you just said, being a servant, having a servant's heart, helping others, because that's definitely a gift that is given to people. I know I have several friends who are just so headstrong in serving others, and that is so gratifying for them. But the spiritual gifts test, there were so many options, and I can't remember all of them. Serving, you know, just helping others, being a mentor to others, and so many, you know, categories off of that that you can do that really just, you know, speak to people. And I think when you take a test like that, something is bound to jump out at you. Of what your purpose is, and how it's just so gratifying. And when you discover that, it's like, you know, Jasmine on Aladdin says, it's a whole new world. It's opened up to you, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've got a question for you about, if moms now have made motherhood a purpose in the ways our parents didn't. And we'll talk about that right when we get back from this commercial break.
Hey guys, Anna here. With a 2-year-old and an infant, I think it's pretty obvious that I don't get any sleep these days. So it should be no surprise to you that having a mattress that also keeps me awake like a crying baby really grinds my gears. Enter Casper mattresses. You guys really need to look Casper up. They're so cool. First, they sell directly to consumers, cutting out the middleman and giving us incredible prices. Second, they deliver it right to you. Shipping is free to US and Canada, and they deliver it in a small box that makes you like, how the heck did they do that? Anyway, for someone like me who's super picky about my mattress, Casper is right up my alley. They're designed, developed, and assembled right here in the U.S. and obsessively engineered at a shockingly fair price. They have that amazing memory foam I love to create an award-winning sleep surface. The sink and bounce on these puppies is just right. And I'm not the only one who feels this way. Casper has over 20,000 reviews with an average of 4.8 stars, making them soon to be the internet's favorite mattress. So here's what we're going to do. With the special code I'm about to give you, we're all going to try Casper for 100 nights, risk-free, in our own home. If we don't love it, we'll have them pick up the mattress and give us all full refunds. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. So, to get our $50 off toward any mattress, we're going to visit www.casper.com/asshow. That's www.casper.com/A as in Anna, S as in Susanna, show, and use promo code AS show. Let me know how much you love it.
All right, we're back. So do you think that women have made, in this day and age, maybe it's because of, I don't know why, but do you think that maybe we've made motherhood a purpose, which has caused so much of the helicopter parenting we have today?
That's a very deep question, Anna.
I know.
I don't know how to answer that, really. I don't want to say something asinine. I think a lot of women who just dive into living for their children are, I'm trying to figure out how to word this without sounding like a complete tool. I think women who are just so consumed by their children are really a pain in the butt for the rest of
oh, God, they're just taking way too much time on lunch.
They are.
Way too much time on lunch. Making our lunches just look like, just toss it in the trash.
And you know what? I think there are some mothers who genuinely enjoy doing that.
That is true.
I think there are mothers who really love crafting and, you know, making goodie bags for the Christmas party, mm-hmm, and really find satisfaction in that. I am not one of those mothers, and that does not mean that I love my children less than they love theirs. It just means I was not wired that way, and I provide love and the basic needs for my kids and take care of them, but I do not find joy in making macaroni necklaces for 6 hours. Okay.
No, either do
so I. I do think some women thoroughly enjoy that, and that's fine and great. But I know for fact there are some women who feel they have to do those things out of guilt.
Mm-hmm. Or their child's birthday is not going to be as good as their friend's birthday.
That's right.
They don't make all of these handmade football cupcakes.
Again, doesn't that go back to the internet, though?
I think it does. I think that it creates a false persona of who we are and what we're doing throughout our day. And that's why it has created this counterculture of, you know, mommy drinks vodka, because it's almost like, and then that goes a little bit too far. It's like, okay, well, parenting's not that bad, you know, where you got to be wasted all the time.
Yeah.
And so, absolutely. The internet does so many wonderful things, but then it also just shines this light to make you feel there's always a level of inadequacy, and it doesn't matter how good you got it. You know, obviously you've gone viral a gazillion times over. You're on a new level, and then all of a sudden you're on a new level now. And I'm sure that there are times you feel inadequate at this new level because you're in a different tier, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, It's just this constant comparison.
Never good enough.
Good enough thing that just creates havoc with the rest of us. And I'm the type of person, I limit how stressful something is going to be. So I know Rob's family is in Texas really has wanted us to bring the children. And a lot of people travel with their kids. Great. For Anne, my kids, well, Poppy's just a baby, but Lucy only sleeps in her crib. So to even have her try to sleep somewhere else for a night, I can't even imagine what that would be like. Would you just be up all night bouncing? I mean, I don't know. Exhaustion, tantrums, I'm not sure. Well, you know what?
I don't condone that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You guys don't. But it's a tip. It's a really good tip, but don't do it.
No.
So I told Rob, I was like, they've got to be at an age where they travel better. I hate to say it, but he goes, well, what if we drive? And I go, for 14 hours, we'll have to get out every 45 minutes to get a toddler out of a car seat. You know, it's just, they're too small, and the baby, and I'm nursing, and the pulling over, and then flying. Mm-hmm. Flying and the stress of a baby screaming on a plane just put a fork in me. I'm done. Yeah. And I'm not one of those people that judge women. I look at them with compassion and I'll help if I can. But I limit things that I do because I know this is going to stress me out to the point of no return and I will hate it. And I get to enjoy life too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
So I know a lot of women who will put themselves in some of the most horrible, stressful situations thinking that it's good for the kids. And it's like, you know what? It can wait. Playing outside, it can have so much wonder that you don't have to haul everybody over to the children's museum on a day that you're really exhausted or kind of have a headache or this or that. You know what I mean? Like there,
I do.
You can just give yourself a break. And if you have a small child, say no. I've got an infant. The answer is no. I cannot do it. You know? Yes. And
keep it simple.
Just keep it simple. Just say no. We talked about you really respected a woman who just would say no.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It's too stressful. I want to be with my family. And so I just have friends who have stressed themselves out by trying to do all of these things that, and one of my friends, she made a good point. She goes, yeah, but if I don't go through the stress of this or take my baby cross country so that my, you know, to a volleyball thing for my daughter or whatever. And then she took a toddler and a newborn. I was like, dear God, have somebody babysit. What are you doing? You know, or have your husband take her. What did you take all of them for? She goes, because if I don't do those things, then I don't live life. I thought that was a good point. I saw what she was saying. You know, if I don't do these things, then what am I doing? Just sitting at home doing nothing?
Yeah.
But then I thought to myself, you know, is she practicing her gifts right now? Does she have anything else going on? Because if you do, I hate to, that sounds like I'm making a judgment. But let's use this as a theoretical kind of scenario. Do we sometimes go too far and put ourselves through horrible, stressful situations because we don't have our gifts or anything else really going on? And we're like, there's nothing more to life. So then we feel like, okay, I need to take the 2-year-old and the newborn cross country because there's nothing more to life. You know what I mean?
Jeez. Go to yoga or something.
It's food for thought. I'm not saying that that's bad if you want to do it. And some people, maybe people handle stress better than I do. I'm not making a judgment on it. It was just ended up being a total nightmare for her. It was like nightmare week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Screaming, never sleeping, pulled the car over and yelled at kids. You know what I mean? It was just so horrible for her. And I go, why did you do it in the first place? Well, if I don't do it, then I'd miss out on so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with motherhood, you do miss out on a lot. You know, I miss out on a lot because I exclusively breastfeed and I hate pumping. So because of that, if the baby can go, great. If she can't go, I'll see you guys later. You know what I mean? Like, this is the season that I'm in. And I've just accepted it. Well,
that's the word. That's the word, season.
Mm-hmm.
You will not be breastfeeding this child when she's 12, I hope. So that will be an entirely new season. I think that's our part of the plan is there's seasons for things and your purpose and gift may change. For a season, you may want to be a missionary. And then for a season, you may want to do this. And then for a season, do that. I think that's fine for those things to change. As long as you are not, your entire identity is not attached to your children.
Right. Exactly. So I was reading this, Rob, we're thinking about how we want to start disciplining Lucy because she's very, very, very strong-willed. And thank God, at least at this point in her lives, knock on a bunch of wood, her tantrums, if she does have them, are very, very short. But he wants to be proactive. And so he's like, well, why don't we, you know, let's get that Super Nanny book and see what she says. And I was like, well, if you want to, go ahead and get it. And I was reading it and it was talking about like the toddler's day that starts with breakfast and then a morning learning activity, and then a snack, and then maybe 30 minutes of a learning television show, then lunch, then nap, another learning activity, playtime with dad. It did this list.
Did our parents have this book?
No.
Clearly. Did we turn out okay?
I can tell you, like, I barely remember my mom because I was with my sister the whole time, not doing learning activities. I was hanging out, playing. You know, I had a much older sister. So I was like, you know, no, they didn't have any of this. But there's a part of me that thought, oh, I should do more learning activities with Lucy because I'm work from home, I do want to provide structure for us. And I do want to make sure that she doesn't feel like I'm ignoring her, which I don't. But I was like, what if I start doing learning activities? So then I started to Google like learning activities for a 2-year-old. But you know, like the ability to do things between 2 and 3 and that span in between is vast. I was like, there's no way she would if I cut out lily pads out of construction paper and told her we need to hop from pad to pad, she'd pick it up and rip it. You know what I mean? She's just a baby. She's going to be like, what are you, crazy? Here.
What does that prove?
It's a learning activity teaching them how to hop, I guess. I was like, I think she's going to figure this out.
I think that's a natural. I think that naturally comes to you.
Yeah. So then I asked around and my sister's like, well, why don't you could make stuff with Play-Doh. And I go, oh, she's going to try to eat it. And she goes, well, make your own with peanut butter. And I was like, okay. So then I looked into that and I was like, oh, that actually I might do one of these days. Mm-hmm. My point is that I started to feel like I had to go to Michael's or Hobby Lobby and buy a bunch of construction paper and draw and cut out lily pads. For my baby. And look,
you don't have to do that.
Super Thank Nanny. Thank you, Susanna.
You don't. I don't even think Super Nanny has children, first of all.
No, okay? She doesn't. And I was like, you're getting paid to cut out lily pads, Super Nanny. So don't even go there with me right now.
Look, if Super Nanny had a couple of kids, lily pads would be the last thing on her mind. Okay?
Exactly.
All right. It'd be a whole new book there. I'm telling you, I think this all goes back to the friggin' internet.
It does.
We are bombarded with so much information and advice and tips. And if you don't do this, this is going to happen. You better do this. Do this. It is too much for us. Mm-hmm. And I think it's ruining all of us.
I do.
We need to get off the freaking internet. Unless you're listening to this podcast, please don't go in.
And take our advice.
Yes.
Just nobody else's.
I remember when I was just so panicked about becoming a mother and when I was pregnant with Natalie and buying all these books and what to expect while you're expecting and this and that. And I remember my mother saying to me, Susanna, you're going to be just fine. We did not have all of these books and these resources when, you know, you were born. Everything's going to be fine. You are making yourself stressed out for no reason. What kind of bottles with this, that, but you know, just worried myself for nothing and everything turned out okay. You learn as you go.
Yeah.
And of course I referred to those books a couple of times, but I pretty much figured it out. I think we all pretty much figure it out. I think women who want to be mothers and who are mothers have that maternal instinct. Of course, I don't think that's something that's taught.
You know, my mom made a good point. When I was going through my miscarriages, she's like, you know too much too soon.
Yeah.
And I would say that there is a blessing to be able to prevent certain tragedies, but those are very rare. And so for the rest of us, we know too much too soon. And she goes, you know what? You were going to miscarry this baby anyway, and it would have happened, and then you would have grieved it then. Now you are grieving for 12 weeks straight.
Yeah.
Because you know too much. Because your HCG levels aren't quite normal. Well, what does that mean? So I spend a whole week panicked about where my HCG levels are at. Or 2 days. You got to wait 2 days, right?
I know all about it.
So you got to do. So then what's wrong with my HCG? Then they go and they do a scan and you see the embryo and the sac. And well, it looks okay, but it's not quite the size of when you say you conceived. So then you're worrying again that it's not going to work out. And it was like worrying every single day. In forums, blah, blah, and then I miscarry. And it's like, you know what? I didn't have to suffer that entire time. Right. You know? And it's like we're suffering the entire time. No matter what phase we're in, it's like we're always suffering. And then for the most part, it always ends up okay. You know? Yeah. We'll get through it.
I wouldn't even have known I was miscarrying if it wasn't for find out 6 days sooner.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have known that I was pregnant and that I was, I would have just thought it was a normal period. Well, it would have been a heavy period, but I would not have grieved those 6 days. Oh my gosh, the line's turning lighter and lighter and lighter.
Right.
Well, it's still 5 days too soon. Maybe I'm just not, it just doesn't have enough yet and this and that. And I mean, you're right. Too much too soon.
Yep. They didn't, you know, you just don't have to suffer for such a, that doesn't mean, you know, these tragedies aren't going to happen to us, but it means that we don't have to sit there and worry about them and then watch them happen until it does happen. I mean, we need to give ourselves a freaking break. Oh, girl, I would be up until 4 o'clock in the morning in forums trying to get a sliver of hope that what we saw in this, that my HCG levels weren't doom. And then there would be people who were like, oh, I had low HCG levels and, you know, I've got a bubbling 3-year-old boy right now and I would have hope. And no, it was, you know, it wasn't going to happen. And sometimes there is a reason to have hope, but I would have had hope. I wouldn't have even been worried about it. You know what I mean? Had I not freaking had to sit there. Oh, I tell you what. So we do. We have way too much information. And I guess, I don't know if I have advice. I don't even know if I'm old enough to be giving advice. But one thing that I've just started to do is that I trust my gut. Now, if I want to do something but I'm afraid of it, then I know I need to do it. If I'm afraid of something and I'm the whole thing just sounds awful, I'm not going to do it. There's a gut instinct that says don't put yourself through that. So I think that when it comes to if you're excited about putting on the birthday and it gives you a thrill to make the cupcakes into little footballs and to spend all of that time doing that, then go for it, girl, because that is a part of your gift. You have a gift for crafting and imagination. And if you want to create that magic, do it. And for and if you think about it and you just feel dread and it's not going to be good enough, go buy it at the store and move on. It'll taste good.
Right.
Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got one of those kids who's like, you didn't make me cupcakes like this person, you know what? Just smack them.
send them to their room.
Send them to their room. Slam. They'll figure it out. We're all adults. All you really have to do is love them unconditionally, and it forgives a lot of ills.
Yes.
I gotta say that. You're on the right path. We'll make it. So I think, you know, I wanted to talk about this today because I want to talk about, there are so many women out there who give their life over to their children, and then their children leave for college, and then they're like, oh my God, I'm in my 40s, I'm 50, I'm whatever age it is. And what do I have left? And for those of us, it's not too late. And your gifts are important. They have been given to you to serve and to bless other people. It's not something that you should do. It's something that you have to do. We need you to do it. You need to do it for yourself. And your kids need to see you fulfilled.
That's right. That's right.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, you pack up your bags and you fly to Bermuda because you feel like your passion is to go paint in Bermuda and leave your kids home and have
paint
them adopted.
Bermuda.
Bermuda's always my go-to destination. I don't know why.
To paint?
For every analogy I use where you have to fly somewhere, it's always Bermuda.
He's a famous artist in Bermuda.
Yeah, they're like, I used to have a mom, but then one day she listened to a podcast. And then she flew to Bermuda and we haven't seen her since.
She paints coconuts in Bermuda. She does cornrow braids on the beach and paints coconuts.
And I have trust issues and abandonment issues because she left. Don't do that.
Don't do that because, you know, some women will make that an excuse. My kids are holding me down. I got to go. No. That's bad parenting is what that is. No.
horrible parenting.
Telling you, if you abandon your kids to go paint in Bermuda, then there's an issue here.
You need counseling.
That's right. Your children are your priority, but you have a purpose of your own that needs to come to fruition.
That you can practice and work on simultaneously. You must do it. You absolutely must do it.
And you know what it is. Don't stand around talking about, I don't know what my gift is. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody knows. And like you said, if it's not a craft like us, writers, artists, whatever, there's still an array of gifts.
Yeah. And don't say you don't have time, because you do.
You do.
I watched four episodes.
You'll make time.
I watched four episodes back to back of a little people, not a little people, of a show of adults with Down syndrome. If I can make time for that, dear God, you can make time for anything. And I will say, I wake up at 4:30, sometimes 5:30. Today I woke up at 6. I started to get out my planner, my prayer journal. My two-year-old woke up. I had the worst day today because I didn't wake. You think you're suffering by not getting that sleep. When I wake up at 4:30, I have the best day because I got me in first.
Yeah.
Am I drooling by 6:45? Yes. Slurring my speech while I'm helping my daughter get into her PJs? Yes. But up until then, it was a good day.
Day's over at 5:45 anyway, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
The day is done.
And let me tell you something. When you wake up at 4:45, you feel like you have lived a million lives by the time it hits, by the time it hits dinner. You're like, my God, I've been up since last week. It just feels like decades.
I did wake up at 4:30 this morning.
On purpose?
To pee.
Oh, see, and then you just crawled right back into bed, didn't you?
I did. But you're right. When I would make time to get up in the morning and do my devotion and everything, the most successful people wake up early. That's God's honest truth.
But you do a lot of your stuff at night, and that works for you. So, right? Don't you do most of your stuff at night?
I do. And I wouldn't say it works for me, but that's what I do. I'm still working through some issues with that. I'm trying to get back on a schedule. If I can get caught up and finished with this book, then I'd like to get back up early and exercise and devotion and find some real purpose. It's such a gratifying feeling when, you know, you've accomplished so much and it's only 8:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's a terrible feeling when you still have so much to do and it's 2:15 in the afternoon.
it's horrible.
It's the worst.
And a little note about waking up. There's a lot of magic about the ambrosial hours, which is around 3:30 to 4:30. And I know that sounds horrific, but it's when we're in a kind of a subconscious state where we tend to be our most creative. And some of the most creative, successful people did their work during the ambrosial hours. Paul McCartney, Elizabeth Gilbert, several actors would wake up that early and they were their most creative selves. And so there is something to be said about waking up that early. You just have to be disciplined about going to bed early. And trust me, it won't be that hard.
Yeah.
Just don't do like a 6:45, like when you're sitting up on the couch like a horse while your two-year-old's in your lap. And then like that little, I'll just pass out for like 10 minutes, right? I'm just gone. And then I could be up till midnight. Don't do that. Uh-huh. That's a mistake. You can't get those little cat naps. You got to fight it. Slap yourself.
I get sleepy during Wheel of Fortune.
Oh my gosh. I haven't seen
that. Do-do-do-do. I will pass out after dinner watching Wheel of Fortune. That wheel ticking, 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 ticking just puts me in a coma. And then all of a sudden I'm up till 4 in the morning because I took a 45-minute nap.
That's it. You gotta watch out for that. That'll kill you.
You pass out, and Vanna's on, and then you wake up, and it's the 10 o'clock news, and you're like, what? What happened?
And you cannot go to bed. You can't just be like, well, because I'm going to go to bed. No. You'll be, if you even try it, you'll just sit there blinking in the dark. That's all.
You will.
Yeah.
Took three Ambien, just still sitting up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if there's anything Suzanne and I can leave with you guys today, it is to go for it. And if you are feeling lonely, if you're feeling isolated, figure out what your gifts are. It's one of the most important things you'll realize in your whole life. And we can do it at the same time. It's not about having it all with your parents or with your children and being a parent. It's about fulfilling what you're supposed to do on this earth while raising the most important things to your life in your life. So,
and like you said, that's a good example for your children.
Absolutely.
To see that you love yourself and care for yourself and make time for yourself so that they will do that when they become parents. But hopefully they won't run off to Bermuda to paint.
And abandon and leave their kids with you. Yeah. Then you're going to be raising your grandbabies because they're in Bermuda painting coconuts.
where did I go wrong with her?
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Never made time for herself. And now she feels like she just has to run off to Bermuda to paint coconuts. It's all your fault, Mom.
You guys, if you haven't already, go get Susanna's 10 Years Taken on Amazon. And then I'm getting suspicion on Sugar Creek. It should be here any day. And I'll be reading that next. You can follow Susanna at Whoa Susanna. Just Google it. If you need to find her, you'll find her on most of her channels. Follow her there. And you can follow me, Ha-Ha's for Hoo-Ha's by Anna Lynn Thomas. Susanna, we'll see you next week. Bye, guys. Bye.